You're listening to the Comic Crusaders Podcast. I am your host, Al Mega, CEO of Comic Crusaders and Undercover Capes. In this show, I'm sitting down with creators from all walks of life to talk about inspiration, process, the lessons they've learned, and a whole lot more. What up? It's your boy, Al Mega. Welcome to a brand new Comic Crusaders Podcast. And yo, today we are talking Spawn. Now, the other day we had the writer of this upcoming book in 2024. You got to be looking out for a call. You know, I mean, what was it? The Deadly Tales of the Gunslinger, baby. And that was with Jimmy Palmiotti. And today, you know, you heard the praises he sang of his amazing artist. This artist right here is with us today. You know, he's not just an artist, he's a co-creator, he's a comics creator. He's a boss on that level that's about to bring us that amazingness. I can't wait to show you some exclusive stuff that he shared with me that we're going to be able to share with you guys today. Let me introduce the one, the only, the future legend, the superstar in the making, the one, the only, up with a championship for like the awesomest artist ever, Mr. Patrick Reynolds. Wake up, how you doing?
Hey, Al, the only person who's said nicer things about me has been my mom. So thank you very much for all that. I appreciate that. I feel like I need like intro music now or something. Like I need to play Lady Gaga or something like that.
Let's go. You get into the ring, bro, and you do your thing and just rock out, brother. Cause, you know, you are a superstar. So, you know, you've been doing your thing. You've been co-creating. You've been creating. You're out there making the business known, you know. In your journey, you know, we're about to learn about it, because if y'all don't know who Pat is, we're about to, you know, get into it, you know what I mean? So my first question, as always, my brother, where do you originally hail from, and what is the first thing that you ever fell in love with in comics?
Man,
or so, pop culture in general, the first thing you fell in love with, the thing that led you into this fandom of ours.
Sure. First of all, very nice to meet you. First time on your podcast, and this is going to be awesome. I'm originally from Salt Lake City, Utah, but I moved to Las Vegas, Nevada when I was in my 20s to go teach middle school. And after about...
Oh, man, thank you for your service.
After teaching for 5 years, I actually put all my stuff in a trailer. And my parents and I drove from Las Vegas to Savannah, Georgia, so I can go to art school to learn how to be a comic artist when I was 29 years old. So I'm kind of... Oh, go ahead.
Well, you're telling me your family just got up, bounced and left in support of you to another state. Like, all right, let's make it happen together.
Yeah.
Love, man. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, like, let me tell you, like, you know, moving your son halfway across the country and encouraging him to quit his job with a pension so he can learn how to draw comics for money is a sure sign of, like, pure parental love. So,
I mean, were they hippies in their day and time or what? I mean, what's popping with their backstory? Because, geez, I mean, to be so supportive, that's amazing.
Oh my God. Yeah, well, that's a whole different podcast about my parents. Like, they're actually, you know, they're just... You know, my mom and my stepdad were my parents, and they weren't really hippies. They were just really hardworking people, and they were just really they knew that they really wanted to see their kids do things that made them happy. And they knew that when I was teaching, I wasn't really happy, you know, and I was just stressed out all the time. And they're like, "Why don't you draw comics?" And I was like, "But that I needed health benefits." And they were like, "Well, we'll figure it out. We'll be down there tomorrow. Put your house on the market, and you know we'll make it happen, and we'll drive you to Georgia to go learn how to draw comics." And because they knew that's what I needed to do to be happy and also to be honest with myself, right? So, but I think, you know, and after luckily, you know, after like year two, I started getting work at Dark Horse before I graduated, which was really fortunate, I think. Yeah. But,
how that happened?
Man, I just. I did this comic story about Jackson Pollock because I'm a huge nerd about like
Jackson Pollock comic. Wow, that definitely is geeky.
Yeah. Oh God, it gets geekier. Let me tell you, because I just am fascinated by like how things were made. Right. I wanted to know like how he like figured out that splatter painting thing because no one else had done it before. And turns out
he's probably a murderer.
What's that?
He's probably a murderer.
Well, he had a lot of stuff going on, so you don't know, maybe. But we had to do a comic without any words. It was called Pantomime, and so I tried to think of a story that I could tell without any words. I'm like, well, I don't, whenever I draw stuff or whenever I paint stuff, like, I have my, you know, my Tina Turner, my Lady Gaga going in the background, but I just have this internal dialogue, and I'm just working for hours. And so I thought, well, let's draw Jackson Pollock's story. And it was all about how he discovered the splatter thing, and it was basically just an accident. He just spilled some stuff on the floor, just really likes the mark that he made, and just started dumping paint all over the canvas. And lo and behold, he became, you know, the Jackson Pollock we all knew. And I was just sort of fascinated by, you know, by how he figured that out. And then I sent that to Dark Horse. I sent that to Duncan Fegredo, who was drawing Hellboy at the time. And I really liked what he did and liked his work. And I in the email, it was just a cold email. I said, hey, Duncan, I really admire your work on Hellboy, and I'm getting ready to graduate. I really need a job in comic because I didn't want to go back to teaching. And you know, can you give me any pointers or critique, or let me know if you know anybody who needs an artist. And within like a day, he sends a reply saying, this is really good stuff. I'll send this to the editor at Dark Horse to see what he thinks. The next day, the editor said, hey, Duncan sent me your stuff. Would you like a job? And I was like, yes, I would love a job to write comics.
Yeah.
And well, I started with a short story about on MySpace Presents. That's how old I am.
MySpace Presents. Holy shit. Folks, you hear this? Just look it up. It's in Wikipedia these days, right?
Oh my god, yeah, this was like 2009. It might as well have been like the 1960s. It was that long ago, you know. But and then after that, I did that job, and he started giving me one shots. I did Ape Sapien, The Haunted Boy, and then Serenity, mm-hmm. Firefly, and then it moved on to Let Me In, the American remake of Let the Right All One right. In.
See, but we missed this whole thing. So your parents are supportive of you creating comics, but how did your love of comics even come about?
So I really love the first Batman movie, 1989, Tim Burton. You know,
so you went to, who took you? Your parents took you? Or you went with a group of friends or what? Did you have a tribe? What's going on here?
So that was 1989. So I was like 11 years old. And we went to a drive-in. We saw that thing at a drive-in.
A drive-in. Oh, yo, folks, you hear this? Oh, wow. I saw this in a Brooklyn theater, and people started throwing fireworks in the theater, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it was dangerous. And you went to a drive-in. I'm jealous.
Yo, my kid, that was, you know, but like, and when the bat wing flies up in the middle of the moon and creates the bat symbol, you could hear people cheering in their cars at that moment. And I was 11 years old. I'm like, I love Batman. I wanted to do something that was that cool. And so I went to my comic book store, and actually I didn't even buy any Batman comics at first. I bought Dark Horse stuff. I bought like the MySpace Presents Aliens with the Bernie Wrights and Alien on the cover. And I brought RoboCop versus Terminator. That was my first. Oh. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, if you see that as a kid, I don't effing blame you on the show. Like, yo, wait a minute. These cats are fighting. If you're a fan of movies as a kid, it's like, what the F is going on here? Seriously? Yep. I get you, bro. I'm down with you. Don't you worry.
Blew my mind. And then when I got a little bit older, I got introduced to Dave McKean and Grant Morrison's Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
And I opened it up, and literally, like, my face fell off of my skull. Like, I couldn't believe, like, what I was seeing. Like, you have fossils, and you have, like, these old analog photographs that are sort of integrated and painted over with actual scraps of, like, a wedding dress for Amadeus Arkham. And I hadn't seen anything like it at all in my life. And I didn't even read the book because I was just so fascinated by, like, the images. And I thought, that's what I want to do. I want to do something that makes people look at it and go, wow, that's real. I didn't think about Batman like that, or I didn't think about comics like that. And so it just started from there. And actually, I slept with that book underneath my pillow because I was reading it so much.
Really?
And I told Dave McKean that when I met him at Comic-Con, and I think he called security on me. I was so glad to meet you, Dave. I sleep with your book under my pillow all day and all night. He's like, security, please, over here.
Yeah, watch my back over here. This guy's got something going on.
Okay. Yeah. So, so that's how it started for me. Yeah.
Did you have a tribe or you were a soloist in your geekiness?
Man, I was pretty alone, I think. But the cool thing was like I had friends in my neighborhood that were around my age, and that's right when Spawn came out, like around and my friend Skyler like invited me over. He's like, dude, I got this new comic. You're not gonna believe it. This guy comes. The guy's from hell. He's covered with chains. I'm like, what? And I opened it. And it was like Spawn number one. And I thought, who is this guy? They're like, we don't know, but he comes from hell and he's a warrior of some kind. Mm-hmm. He's a badass. And I thought, yes, that's really cool. I didn't quite know what was going on at the time. Look, and I'm like, that's really cool. And now, 30 years later, I actually get a chance to draw him. So yeah.
What's up, man? Yeah, I get you, man. I'm a big fan. If you could see over here, and over here, my whole shelf is nuts. All the Spawn stuff, T1. I got the OGs hanging on the wall over there. The comic. So you know, I mean, and speaking to Jimmy and the excitement of this, you know, of this other Spawn, you know, from the era that he's from.
Yeah.
So, you know, all right, so maybe before we get into that, Spawn, talk about your journey now, stepping into, you know, like you said, Dark Horse and all. Like, how was it for you? Did it feel easy? Did you feel comfortable with the schedules you were being handled with as an artist? Because, again, you know, you're stepping new into this. You know, what was that journey like for you?
Yeah, I knew I wanted to draw comics for a very long time, but I just didn't think I could make it as an artist. And so that's one of the reasons why I went to teaching. Like, you know, year three of teaching, I just started like, you know, why don't I just try plan A? You know, why don't I just try drawing comics? You know, even though I don't really know how to draw them. And so every day during my break when I was teaching my prep period, I would just take my sketchbook out and I would just draw something. You know, no matter how tired I was, no matter how difficult my day was, and there were a lot of them, you know, teaching middle school in Las Vegas.
But as a teacher, again, you know, salute to you, man. Again, that's patience, and I'm happy you still have most of your hair and that's a toupee.
Yeah, that's what this is too, actually. Hopefully glue sticks on here. The drawings I was doing basically just turned into a graphic novel about my biological father. And I don't know why it just turned into that. And cause he wasn't really close with me and he wasn't really in my life a whole lot. And so I actually used that as a portfolio to get into art school, you know, granted, I didn't know anything about how to tell stories or anything like that. And they accepted me and they said, yeah, you should come and here's a fellowship. And that's when, you know, my parents were like, okay, we'll be down there. We'll be down there soon. Get your stuff ready. We're going to art school. Like, okay. But I didn't know how to work. If that makes any sense. Like, I didn't know like how to like.
The grind. Yeah.
I didn't know how to meet deadlines. Didn't know how to like, you know, what was expected of me as an artist. And so I sort of had to learn, you know, I like the idea of like, you learn things by doing them. There is no other way. That's just the best way to learn how to do stuff. And so
thrown into the fire, baby. Let it burn. Let it burn. That's how you learn.
Yeah. Just, you know, and that's the best way to learn stuff is just to go out and do it. You're going to fail a lot, but you're going to learn what you don't want to. That's kind of how I started is I just, you know, I was like, okay, so I have to have this much done every day until my deadline. And so actually I started making, again, huge nerd. Whoops, there it goes. But I started making this spreadsheet of like, you know, everything I have to do. I don't know if you can see it that well, but everything I have to do for each issue, pencils, inks, research, all that kind of stuff. And I just learned how to pace myself that way. And at the end, when I get everything, all those checks marked off, I can take it. I'm all finished. And so I needed to be taught how to do that, if that makes sense. And honestly, like once I got my first job, it was easy for my editor to give me more work. I had to prove to him that I could finish something and I could finish it on time because there's a lot of artists out there who are who are excellent at drawing and making stuff, but they can't meet deadlines. And that's what you need to learn how to do. And so once he saw that I can meet my 8-page story deadline, he gave me a 24-page one shot. And then after I met that deadline, he gave me a 4-issue miniseries. And then it just sort of went from there. And it is a hell of a lot of work. I will tell you that. And especially the way I work with, you know, I use photo reference. And so I have to like get models together, you know, and really think about like how people see the page and the way that I want them to see it. And so sometimes I have to watch movies to like make sure I get like ideas for backgrounds. Like I love David Fincher. He's really good at composing like blacks and shots. You know, if you watch The Game, or if you watch even Fight Club, or even Social Network, or The Social Network.
Great really movie.
Good. Yeah, awesome movie. And he's really, really good at composing with black. And so I sometimes I'll just watch a movie just to like nerd out on it and like write notes about like, okay, this is what I liked about what he's doing and here. And so I kind of apply that to, you know, to backgrounds and even characters. So that's part of the reason why it takes so long to do stuff. But after I did, and that progressed until I was doing like, you know, Hellboy short stories and then Joe Golem and then Aliens, which is sort of like, you know, besides Spawn and Batman, that's like the thing I always wanted to do the most. Like my 12-year-old self was doing backflips the entire time I was drawing Aliens. I'm like, yeah,
heck yeah, bro, shit.
It's, you know, I saw Aliens first before I saw any other of the Alien movies, and I was 12.
Okay.
And I thought, okay, that's gonna be cool. And
well, let's play maze about that, man, because you're talking about the movies we've seen at the same time. Like, yes, I saw that too in the theaters back in the 80s first before I saw the OG.
Oh, you saw it in the theater? Oh my god.
Yeah, I saw it. I'm aging myself. I gotta see Aliens in the theater.
I saw it on the TV, but like I actually went back and saw it in the theater a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, I remember watching Aliens on VHS and wearing the tape out.
To see The Fly, the one with the Goldblum in the theater.
Yeah, the one that would be really cool. Like certain movies you have to see in the theater, right? Like The Fly.
The Fly does way better in the theater than it does on the small screen. I'll tell you that much.
Next, some movie like the movie Gravity, you got to see that in the theater, right? Or Pacific Rim, got to see that in the theater, even though we could have a whole nother podcast about Pacific Rim. Oh my god, cool. I love it.
Oh yeah, I'm a fan. All right, bet we're gonna have to do that about kaijus and all this shit because I love that whole fucking franchise. Anyway, before there's another franchise I love, you know. But before we get right into that, talk about you know that co-creation and that teamwork with the Bloodstained Teeth over Image. You know what I mean? What's that all about?
So I hadn't done any... This is right after I finished The Mask, written by Chris Cantwell and with Dark Horse. And I was getting ready to finish up, and Christian Ward just sent me a message via Twitter one day saying, "Hi, I'm Christian Ward. Would you like to draw a comic together about vampires? I really like your stuff." And when Christian Ward asks you to work with him, you don't say no. You're like, yes. When do you want me to start, basically? And he's like, okay, I got this idea. It's vampires, but they're like billionaires, right? So I'm like, oh, so it's basically nonfiction, right? He's like, yeah, pretty close, right? The vampires kind of like run everything. They're billionaires, right? And our guy is trying to make money off being a vampire by turning other people into vampires, right? But the higher ups, the vampire elder council, right, doesn't like what he's doing. And so he has like a whole, he has to get rid of and go kill everybody he's turned into a vampire. And so, but it's sort of like becomes this, we're trying to figure out like, okay, what does he look like? And so I always try to kind of relate things to like the real world a little bit. So we thought like, okay, we sort of landed that on like, he's sort of like David Bowie and Lucifer from The Wicked and the Divine, if they somehow had a child, you know. And
that was so, called Christopher Walken. So.
You know, and I looked at like, you know, Robert Pattinson, Christopher Walken, David Bowie, of course, to sort of figure out like where to start from.
They all got that vampire look, all of them, bro.
No, they do. And And so I thought, like, okay, you know, so it's like a basically modern take on vampires. And so, like, I would research, like, okay, what does a modern vampire look like? What's this castle look like? And so I started looking at these old derelict skyscrapers, you know, that sort of were falling down. And there's one in Venezuela called the Tower of Babylon. It's the tallest slum in the world, but it's this old skyscraper that they didn't finish for whatever reason. And people just sort of moving in there. It's got no power. You know, it's got, you know, but people, it's like, I forget how many stories it is, but it's just this decayed skyscraper. And I thought, that's my vampire castle right there, you know, like, and so, you know, it's really, it was really great sort of being a part of coming up with something that people hadn't seen before. And then we put it on top of that Heather Moore's coloring, which was just like, looked like it came right from space, man. It was just so like something I hadn't seen before. It's like, if I imagine if that's what listening to or going to a Pink Floyd concert would sound like for the first time, you're just like, what is this? Gotcha. But it made so much sense the way she colored it, because my work's really grounded. Her stuff is really, is not at all. And so I think it really, really complemented the style perfectly. And in the end, you know, the vampire learns a lesson and he becomes a better person. So that's kind of how it starts. And we had to leave it at issue number 10, you know, and, you know, so we can do some other stuff. And, but, you know, Christian is always, he's always thinking about stuff. He's like, hey, got this idea for this, for a more Bloodstained Teeth stuff. Like, we can have like a border patrol agent who is a vampire, you know, somehow we can work that in. And I'm like, yeah, just do it. I don't care what it is. I'll draw it. I don't care what it is. And now he's like, you know, trying to get me, or he's working with me on some other things to be published, you know, from other publishers that we will announce very soon, of course. But
very nice. Very nice.
I met him at Thought Bubble for the first time in person last month. And he is just an adorable human being. Like, he just is this guy who wants to take care of people. He wants to make sure that you're successful. You know, he's always trying to give me tips. He's like, you're taking a day off, right? And I'm like, I'm trying. You know, or he's like, you know, you should go hang out with your girlfriend more. I'm like, yeah, I really should do that. Thank you. You know, or he's like, you know, here's how you work smarter and not harder with stuff. And so he's really helped me to like figure out how to maintain the work that I do and the style that like I like to do without trying to kill myself over doing it. And that's what I've noticed as getting older, is that like, now that I'm sort of more established, I'm now trying to figure out how the self-preservation thing, you know, how to like not burn myself out every
Very
day.
Good.
It's just hard. I can't work like I'm 29 anymore, you know, like having to like.
Countless meals as we age, you know what I mean? We got to take time for ourselves and our families, you know.
Yeah.
It's like you said, you know, you're there already, brother. And you got this dope book that you're working on with the amazing Jimmy P. Now, talk about this, man, this baby you got going on here with the Deadly Tales of the Gunslinger. I mean, what approach are you bringing to this bad boy right here?
So when I was working on Bloodstained Teeth, I was right in the middle of it, literally like an issue number 5. And Tom McFarlane just sends me a DM on Instagram. He just said, hey, Patrick, I really like what you do. Would you like to be part of the Spawn universe and do some artwork for us? And after I got finished freaking out and calling my mom, I was like, oh, hey, man, I'm in the middle of Bloodstained Teeth. I can't really do anything long term, you know. But I was like, I said, I'm in the middle of a long term project. You know, I would love to do something, you know, more short term and cover something like that. But yeah, let's keep talking. And he didn't reply. And I'm like, oh no, did I piss off Todd McFarlane?
Did I? Oh my God, I fucked this up.
That's what I thought. I'm like, oh, did I piss off Todd McFarlane? And so a year later, this year, actually, in like the spring of this year, when I was just wrapping up Bloodstained Teeth, issue number 10, he sends me another message. And it basically says the same thing. He's like, hey, Patrick, just want to see how you're doing, if you're interested in doing Spawn again. And I go, I got a second chance. I didn't piss him off, thank God. And I just replied to him like, yes, what do you want me to do, sir? I think I called him sir.
You reported to the fucking armed forces, right? Let's go. You are, man. You're becoming a hellspawn, you know? You are servicing now. What's popping, baby?
I know. And he got back pretty quickly. He's like, good, my assistant will send you a link so we can have a meeting about you know, what's next, and we'll talk to you then. And I thought, great. And Thomas Healy, the editor, and Todd got on a call with me, a Zoom call with me, and Todd was driving in California, so his reception was really spotty. And but he asked me, he's like, so what do you want to do? If you had the choice to draw any comic in the world, what genre of comic would you do? And I gave the stupid answer, which is like, I'll draw anything you want me to, sir. Called him sir again. and he's like, No. Everybody says that. If you had the choice to draw any comic in the world, what genre would it be? Be specific. And I go, okay, I would really love to draw a Western. Yeah. And because I've never drawn a Western before. And my favorite movies, a lot of my favorite movies are Westerns. Unforgiven, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
And Eastwood, the Spaghetti Eastwood, man. Shit. Come on, bro. And Bronson joins too, man. And then my father be showing me every time I go to New York, the old school Gene Autry joints and all that. I mean, I'm like, damn. He goes, these are cowboy movies. I'm like, oh my God, Pop.
I think, I mean, your dad and my dad should go bowling sometime because my dad's the same thing. And that's, I think I watched The Good and the Bad and the Ugly when I was like 11 years old. He's like, these are one of the standard works. We're going to watch this. And it was, you know, 3.5 hours long, but.
But it's good though. I think as I got older, I sat down and watched that shit. I said, "All right." And my wife called me watching it. She said, "Damn, this is like an old man movie." And like, shut up. I've actually technically grown it. I'm like, now I get it. And now I understand why my pop was telling me this was so good. As a kid, I was like, "Yeah, like you, 3.5 hours when I could be outside playing."
Yeah, it was worth it because like. You know, and that's how I got introduced to like my dad was also a big Jack Nicholson fan. So I watched Chinatown, Five Easy Pieces, you know, and I got really into movies from the 70s, which is really important. There's a certain look that movies from the good movies of the 70s have, like, you know, Alien, but also Chinatown and 3 Days of the Condor. You know, those movies were great. And but I also really like modern Westerns, like, you know, like Unforgiven's a little more modern, right? But also The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. But also movies like You Can Count No Country for Old Men as a Western.
Do I love that movie. And it's also based on a graphic novel for people.
Yeah. In the novel, like Cormac McCarthy, like I have, you know, Cormac McCarthy we can have a whole podcast about Cormac McCarthy, but you know, Jimmy said in his interview with you a few days ago, he said that, like, you know, there's this, you know, the Westerns take place on the edge of the frontier, on the edge of civilization, right? And so there's all of these decisions and basically we're making up laws on how to be a society as we're going, right? And a lot of people die trying to figure that out. But it's like, you know, you push people at the edge of where nature meets like civilization. And that's what makes Westerns really cool, is because that creates all these really cool pressures on people and these really great characters. Like even Deadwood, like the TV show, is great at showing stuff like that. Like what happens on the very edge of civilization where there's no roads, but there's like whorehouses, right? You know, what happens?
I look at this picture. I think that kind of, you know, portrayed a lot of what you're saying there. This man is like, you know, on the edge, right? The other world. Like, where the hell is he going on this horse? I mean, this is mountains behind him. What's in front of him? You know, it's
crazy.
Talk about this scene. I mean, where did you get this? Is on that Bob Ross level, bro. I mean, that's it. The Patrick, Mr. Ross Reynolds. I mean,
there are some little bushes there, I noticed. There, you know, Jimmy's really good. Of course, we all know Jimmy's really good at writing Westerns, but he's really good at putting things in a specific place. And this story, Gunslinger Spawn, takes place in Gunnison, Colorado, or most of it takes place in Gunnison, Colorado. Which is pretty close to, you know, well, close enough to where I actually grew up, you know, in Utah. And I like it when, like, comics or even movies create, like, a character out of the environment, where the environment is something that is important or something that has weight to it, but also, like, emotional weight to it. And we know that, like, Gunnison, Colorado is a very important setting for this story. So I really wanted to make those settings and those scenes memorable. But also, I really wanted to make sure that people know the environment is part of the story as well. Like, even in the image that you see right there, like, the character is literally, like you said, at the edge of a shadow and also at the river. And but there's a whole lot of things that I don't know if people will actually pick up on if, when they read this image, but
there's like a lot going on.
Yeah. But that's, you know, and this is like the first shot we see of Gunnison, Colorado. And I really wanted to make sure that stood out, that people know takes place.
Yeah, bro, and I'm for nothing, man, but let me tell you, you know, that on that dark side, it makes me think of Tales from the Dark Side. The old TV show. You know, I was like, yeah, you know, that's what that, all right, you get it. It's like, all right, man, there's either some light or there's some darkness, but there's sign coming out there. And I look, and then look at this, like, holy fuck, bro.
I really have to, like, give props to our colorist, Luis NCT, who is doing all the colors for this book. He actually colored that image, and the original is right here behind me.
Yeah, look at that. Sexy. Can you put that up on screen a little closer, man, so the fans, I mean, look how pretty that is. Look at that. OG compared to that. Look at that, folks. Oof.
But they were trying, if they want to do, like, a teaser image for San Diego Comic-Con to announce Deadly Tales of the Gunslinger, and they wanted me to do the teaser image, which I thought was really cool. And so I thought, like, okay, they really want this story to be a Western. They want to make sure that people know the story takes place in the 1860s and that we're actually getting a Western gunslinger spawn. And so I thought, okay, how am I going to show this with one image? And I love Western movie posters too, like Pale Rider and artwork done by Bob Peak and, you know, Drew Struzan. And I really thought, okay, so let's turn this teaser image into something that could be like a movie poster or like a wanted poster even, and just sort of let people know that they're going to get a Western this time. You know, they're actually going to get something that takes place on the fringes of like society, right? And so that's kind of where I started from, is just wanted to image that made people know what they're getting into and what where the story is going to go. I will say, thank goodness for Todd McFarlane's action figures, because I use these guys for reference all day long.
Yeah, look at that fucking piece of art right now. Like, holy effing. I mean, and folks, that's not Pharrell. Yeah, I know he wears the same hat, but not Pharrell. I mean, look at that. Crazy, bro. That shit looks so great, dude.
Thank you, Al. Yeah.
You're a monster, bro. You're just a beast. It's like, you said anything that you wanted to draw was a Western, and you know what? It shows, bro.
Yeah, thank you. You know, like, my favorite movies, my favorite comics, when I read them, I know that the creators had a good time making them, or they loved making them. I can just tell if they did. And, yeah. Like, and but I also like it when comics or movies, they like, take a step back, and they kind of pare down the franchise a little bit. Like, one of the best movies I saw last year was Prey, the Predator prequel.
Oh, my God. Listen, my father made me put that on for him. Mm-hmm. My father's not a new movie fan, but he made me put that on for him 3 times because he just loved it. He's like, oh, man, this is so good. I'm like, oh, shit, Pop. I can't believe we agree.
And it's like 96 minutes long, so it's perfect length. It's not overstuffed at all. But the thing I liked about it is it's authentic. Like, even the language was done, and I hope I don't get this wrong, but I think it was like the language was the actors were actually speaking like Cherokee, I think.
Yeah, don't get me wrong either. I don't want to disrespect, you know. But yeah, so but it was definitely in the native. They respected that. The story was dope, and I loved it that they may even consider making more along those things, like, you know, and just that, the other, could you imagine?
Yeah, like I and it's, you know, they had that cool little Easter egg at the end with the pistol that ties into Predator 2, you know. It says 1715 or something like that, but like it just pared down the Predator franchise until it's just one woman against like one like existential threat to everything. And it reminded me a lot of Ripley's character in Alien, where this, you know, she's really smart. No one listens to her, but she has to, like,
the non-threat.
kicking everyone's ass, you know, and decapitating the Predator. But it was authentic, right? And it was, you know, you knew where it took place, and there wasn't anything in it that was overstuffed. And I cared about the characters. That's the thing, is I cared about her, and I cared about what she was going through.
I thought the whole vibe, man, I was feeling it. You know, like, no, damn. This planet is crazy. It was popping, yo. She's crazy. I love this girl. She's got balls.
and she figures out just, you know, she figures out just to use her resourcefulness to defeat this damn thing. And, but I like the way you felt, like, you know, there's that scene where the Predator was killing all those French trapper guys. And it was foggy, muddy. There was no leaves on the trees at all. You felt like you were in a very specific place. Like you felt the bark on the tree as it hit the back of the guy's head as he got decapitated by that shield thing.
I love you say that, and I bring this image up. You know what I mean? There's a tree behind him. He's surrounded. I mean, yeah, look at this image.
So I'm thinking about movies like that when I'm drawing this stuff. I'm like, okay, how do I make that environment like tangible, right? How do I make people be able to feel this and to understand like where he's at, what he's facing? And you know, so basically I just look at everybody else who's better than I am and figure out how they did it and try to sort of incorporate that into stuff I do. But
I gotta ask you, Patrick, my man Jeremy's hat magical because he doesn't have it. So does he magically find it anytime he drops it? Does it not get destroyed?
Good question. So in the first issue that I finished a while ago, we figure out, you know, how he gets his hat, you know, and we figure out like how the actual gunslinger. Right. And because it was hinted at in some flashbacks in the main Gunslinger series, but I sort of had to like kind of reimagine it a little bit. And I don't think it's too much of a spoiler, but you sort of figure out that the hat, There will be some stories, I think, about the hat specifically, but like the hat just sort of comes, these crows just carry the hat to him and just put it on his head the first time he got the costume, and there it is, right? But I will say though that like I have to keep track of that damn hat all the time, like I have to. And it's a, you know, like the design is really cool, but like, you know, if he's fighting those two monster guys, like he gets it knocked off. And so I have to make sure I have the hat flying off somewhere so it just doesn't disappear. Or if he wakes up, you know, afterwards and the hat's not there, I have to make sure like that I have the hat somewhere in the background so he can grab it and put it on so it just doesn't reappear, you know, so that like all the stuff to keep track of, you know, just sort of helps make readers invest in the believability of him. Because I think Jimmy said in the interview with you is that he's not quite the gunslinger yet, you know?
Exactly. And that's what I want to know, like as an artist, you know, working alongside Jimmy, now building the mythos, I mean, really the real full story behind it. I mean, how much fun are you having with this?
Oh my God. It's sort of like being in a Western myself. Like, you know, I was talking about the edges of society. Like we're kind of pushing the edges of his story, right? You know, and so we're kind of making a couple things up. I mean, there's certain things we got to talk about, like, you know, his father, his sister and that kind of thing. But like where the wolves come from or what their deal is. But there's two characters in the first issue, the kind of like mad demon person that we haven't seen before. And when I read the script that Jimmy wrote, he said these two demons there, you know, they split in half. And I'm like, is there like a reference for these two demon guys? Do you just want me to make that up? He's like, yeah, go nuts. I'm like, oh, okay. So it characters. And honestly, my first crack at it wasn't good. I was trying to figure out like, okay, what is scary to me isn't necessarily what's kind of scary to a whole fan base of Spawn readers. Jimmy suggested that I revisit it, and he was absolutely right about it. I thought, okay, I need to make these guys scarier, not creepy, but scary. And so I kind of revisited them, I redid them, and I think it worked out. The demons worked out a lot better, but I got to design a Spawn demon too.
Yeah.
And that's not in like the Bible that Jimmy put together, you know, and so that was a cool thing. But like I said, you know, we're sort of, if you're like in the ocean, we're kind of like not quite able to touch the bottom right now, because this is sort of like unexplored territory a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so we're just sort of floating further out of the ocean of Gunslinger Spawn, which is a really cool thing. And, you know, all these characters that are hinted at are sort of fleshed out now. And so I kind of get to make these characters come to life in a way that not a lot of people have seen before. I'm pretty lucky to get to do that.
And can't wait to see them as figures too. I mean, look at this page right here. How do you murder pages like this, bro? Look at showing your fandom like that scene right there. Look at the heart, the detail in the hearts, yo. Looking like Black Beauty and shit, bro.
Well, and again, mad props to like Louis NCT for making that, you know, for those colors that really put him, that character, in a very, very specific time of night, you know. And this is like the first time I have actually, you know, this is my first time drawing Spawn, and I really want to make sure that it's as unforgettable as I can. Yeah.
Murdering it already. He said his first time. He's already smashing. Jesus Christ.
Well, I really think that, you know, I just really wanted to make sure that people were getting an experience that was not only believable, but also something that, you know, haunts them a lot longer after they close the book, you know. And it's really cool that Todd and Thomas and Jimmy give me a chance to do that. So I'm pretty grateful every day.
I mean, listen, I could see why Jimmy was just talking you up on your amazingness, you know. And again, your colorist, everybody, inkers. I mean, this book, like, it looks like it's going to be beautiful, coming out next year, 2024. I mean, soon. Don't worry, folks. You know, be patient. A lot of cons are coming and announcements. So, you know, they want their books in, because, you know, like Jimmy said, Todd don't like his books late. So he made sure his work is in.
and he should, you know, like, his books are awesome and people love them. So like, yeah, you don't want to disappoint people with that. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing too, is, you know, I didn't know when Todd wanted me to draw this, I was like, are you sure? You know, because my stuff doesn't look like Spawn stuff, you know, like you look at Brett Booth and that stuff he's doing, it's mind blowing, but I don't draw like Brett Booth but Todd
is. Well, and that's what's great, man. That's what's great about it, Patrick, because I grew up, I've been growing up with Spawn, you know, mm-hmm. since the early days. And he did a couple of spin-offs back in the day with very different artists, you know, very different, you know, looks, you know, at Spawn. I thought that was gorgeous. I mean, you know, listen, man, being able to see those different visions of our favorite character through such talented people such as yourself. I mean, I think, you know, we're the ones that are blessed, bro. And thank you. You're gonna bring this book. It's gonna sell out like a mofo. You know what I mean? So where can we get these signed prints? What cons are you doing? I know 2023 is coming to a close, but what's popping for 2024? Well, what do we got going on in the Reynolds verse?
It's good. Glad you asked, because I'm doing Emerald City Comic Con in March, which is my favorite convention of all time in Seattle, and. Mm-hmm. I will have, like,
excuse me, why? Tell me why this is your favorite. Well, what makes it top notch?
So, first of all, I can drive there in 3 hours. but also, like, the fans are incredible. Like, I have people, I started going in 2011, and I have fans coming back every single year after that. And it's a very comic oriented show. Like, they put the artists on their own floor. And they moved us to a different place this last year, which is also great. But they really take care of artists. The fans are great. It's geared toward comics. I love the fans there that keep coming back every year. They have very good taste in Emerald City. Hey. And I like the fact that, you know, I get to see all my friends there, you know. And it sort of became like a really cool community with just artists and fans that, like, I feel like a part of. And it's a lot like Rose City, which is in Portland here, just down, literally down the street. I'll probably be at Rose City this year in September. And I don't know about any other conventions after that. I would really like to go to New York for the first time ever this year.
It can happen, bro. I'll be there, bro. Let's go.
Well, now I gotta go. Oh my gosh, I gotta show you my booty quake. Yeah,
yeah, man. We record it, bro. We rock it out together, bro. I put my beats on and shit. You know, we rock out to some mega beat. Don't you worry,
man. All the reason more to go. And so I think like, for right now, that's pretty much it. I'll be doing Gunslinger, you know, the whole year, and also some other stuff,
right.
Smaller gigs from other publishers that'll be announced soon. So yeah,
Nothing we could talk about then. Nothing we could talk about.
Not at the moment, but it will be, and it'll be with some people that I love working with, and I don't want to get fired yet. So,
great, man. Listen, man, we want to make sure that the Reynolds Versus getting out there, because again, with the artistry you're going to be bringing to the game with the tales of the, you know, Gunslinger, I can't wait, man. I mean, yo, bro, and what you've done already, you know, with the other projects, I mean. Shit, you're a superstar already, man. I can't wait to see what you bring to this as a series and what else we got coming and those announcements. I can't wait to get them in my emails, those press releases, to be told what the Reynolds Royce is doing next, baby.
Now, it's been such a pleasure talking to you, and thank you all for the positive vibes. That really means a lot to me. Thank you very much. That's really
cool. That is what we got to do, man. We got to support our creative people. Thank you as a fan for, you know, coming out there, being creative, and sharing in your artistic ability with us and with the world, man. I definitely appreciate that, and I hope that everybody else does too. You know where else you could appreciate it, folks? Show some love, man. Right there, follow me on Instagram at Patrick J. Reynolds. And then you got this website. Let me know before we go, what is this? Murdering Inc. It sounds vicious.
I was, because I love crows, and so Murder Inc. was already taken, and it doesn't refer to, like, you know, blood. It just refers to, like, crows, because I use a crow quill nib to draw, and so that's kind of what it means. I'm not a murderer, I promise. So yeah, that's my website. You can check it out. All the commissions I've done when I have free time, and all my whole catalog of stuff is there. So check it out. Let me know what you think.
There we go. Show the love and support amazing creators like Pat. And with that, thank you for tuning in. I also told you what to do. Happy holidays, mi gente. Hasta la próxima. ¡Hueva!
Thank you for listening to the Comic Crusaders podcast. If you like the content, please subscribe and turn on notifications. Also, please visit ComicCrusaders.com and our extended podcast family over at UndercoverCapes.com. And also, make sure to download the Comic Crusaders app on the Google Play Store today.